from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up next on Forum this morning, marriage rates have decreased and cohabiting numbers are up, and there are both cultural and socioeconomic reasons for both those trends. A tectonic shift in marriages began back in the 60s, and young adults of prime marrying age since then are staying single more than ever before. As part of our ongoing Keying In on the Census and our Changing Communities ongoing series, we focus in the hour ahead on the declining number of marriages. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Marriages are declining in number and they are declining along class lines. Since 1880, researchers have been tracking marriage numbers, and in 1960, 72.2% of adults over 18 were married, while in 2009, that figure dropped to 52%. The largest number of unmarried adults in that age range among major cities is in San Francisco. And the median age for marriage, now at 28 for men and 26 for women, was at 23 for men and 20 for women back in 1950. The U.S. Census and an extensive Time Pew poll both reveal that marriage rates among young adults have been dropping for decades. Divorce rates are high and cohabitation numbers have gone up, but the economy has kept people from marrying, and those who are putting off marriage the most or foregoing it altogether tend to be less educated and have less income. As part of our ongoing series on our changing communities and the census, we're going to spend this forum hour discussing the ongoing changing nature of marriage. Joining us in studio is Judith Stacey. She's professor of sociology and gender and sexuality studies at New York University, author of Unhitched, Love, Marriage, and Family Values from West Hollywood to Western China. Welcome, Judith Stacey.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. Rick Banks is also with us in studio this morning, professor of law at Stanford. He teaches and writes about changing family patterns and the role of the law in regulating people's intimate lives. He's author of a book called Is Marriage for White People? How the African-American Marriage Decline Affects Everyone. Welcome to the program, Rick Banks.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good to have you. And Leora Lawton is also here in studio with us, a sociologist and demographer at UC Berkeley. She's executive director of the Berkeley Population Center. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you all for being here. And Judith Stacey, let me begin with you. This is, one can say ironically that same-sex marriages are going up or they're rising, but at the same time, traditional marriage, heterosexual marriage is going down. A lot of it, presumably the economy, stagnant paychecks, unemployment, people putting off or foregoing marriage. But also, it seems to be a pattern among the more educated to be more married than the less educated.
That's right. And it's counterintuitive in many ways, but if you look back at our history, there is a certain level of continuity. In a sense, you could think of marriage as a privileged status, even though it's one that has a lot of contradictions. And there's a lot of popular humor about it. Fran Lebowitz is a lesbian comedian who about 10 years ago said, "Who are the squarest people in America? Gays, who else is fighting to join the army and get married?" And then, of course,
somebody else said, gays want to be and lesbians want to be miserable like everybody else.
There was a New Yorker cartoon of a heterosexual couple sitting reading the newspaper, and he says, "Gays getting married, haven't they suffered enough?" But humor aside, in fact, a lot of privileges and benefits come with marriage and access to marriage. At one point, it was legally restricted, but even when it's available, many, many people don't consider that. They often value marriage too much and don't want to get married if they don't have the economic resources to believe that they will last. And paradoxically, divorce consciousness affects the attitudes of many people, especially poor and uneducated women, less educated women, who are worried about having yet another dependent in the household, their husband.
Divorces have kind of stabilized, though, haven't they?
Yeah, actually, they've gone down a little bit. Well, I'll let Leora.
Yeah, we'll get the demographer on this in a moment.
But of course, you're going to get fewer divorces when you have fewer marriages. So that's the other thing. That gets very tricky, and I'll let Leora explain all the statistical stuff.
Before we go to Leora on this, there was also a nationwide poll that said that nearly 40% think marriage is obsolete.
Right.
44% somehow think it ought to be obsolete, but 5% say They still want to get married.
Almost everyone says they want to get married. And I sometimes tell my students that despite the data, marriage is more popular in the U.S.
I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that. I said only 5% said they don't want to get married.
Correct.
Correct.
Oh,
I misspoke.
I heard you the way
the you heard me the way it was, right?
Almost everyone says they want to get married. And the vast majority of Americans do marry at some point in the life cycle, though that's been going down.
And they marry again and again.
That's what I say. It's really, really popular. Americans like to do it a lot. And so some value marriage so much they want to have as many as they can.
But here are these declining numbers, Leora Lawton. And the declining numbers, again, seem to reveal along socioeconomic class lines patterns.
You know, definitely. You have the more educated, those with a college degree are the most likely to get married and stay married, although they do marry later. Mm-hmm. And those, as Judy was saying, with the lower education, they are much less likely to get married. But when they marry very young, and they're more likely to get divorced. Mm-hmm. And that has a lot to do with income and poverty levels and access to education. And so all of those kind of hang together. And people who don't have high school degrees, they can't really afford to get married, and they come from backgrounds where they don't see marriage as a goal.
Well, there's no more that MRS degree to go to college and all that. I mean, women are more successful, and that has a lot to do with
it. Right. Women don't have to get married the way they used to get married. I always sort of compare that to, say, characters in Jane Austen novels who would have to get married. The friend in Pride and Prejudice who married the dowdy parson. Well, it was a job. It was like a good job. It wasn't the best job, but it gave her an income for her life.
It's more acceptable to be not married now. It's less of a stigma. I mean, even if you're cohabiting or you're having kids out of wedlock and all that?
It's certainly less of a stigma. You don't have the social cost that you used to have. And so without as much social cost and without as much and with having the ability to support yourself, so women don't have to, quote, rush into marriage. But if you notice, you know, people often talk about the delay, like women delay marriage. And I find that phrase problematic. First, it implies that delay is there's some fault, something like a train is delayed, something went wrong. But I tend to phrase it more as women and men are marrying later for a variety of factors. Mm-hmm. And you see that between 1960 and now, both men and women are marrying about 6 years later on average. So it's not just women delaying marriage. Men and women are marrying later.
They're delaying more, Rick Banks. They're also, well, as we said, divorce is stabilizing, but there are more people divorced, but they're not marrying more, too. I mean, people just aren't getting married the way they used to.
Right. Well, it's certainly true that we have more people, a greater percentage of the population that is unmarried now, right? It's difficult to know, you know, exactly how many of those people will never marry, because one of the things we're seeing with this delay in marriage is that people are marrying much later, right? It used to be that everyone who would marry by the time they're 40 or so. Now we see many more people marrying for the first time even in their 40s, some even in their 50s. And this was almost unheard of in prior generations. The exception to that here, though, the outlier, so to speak, is African-Americans, whereas it is the case with African-Americans that we have large percentages of the population, as many as 3 out of 10, perhaps, women will never marry. And that is a large figure.
Let's talk about African-Americans for a moment, because the sense is that the number of men who are incarcerated, the number of interracial marriages, more black men marrying white women than vice versa, all of these figure into the picture, really.
Oh, they all do figure into the picture. Black women face a smaller pool of marriageable partners than the trend we see among—
If they're looking for men.
If they're looking for men,
if
they're looking for men, they face a smaller pool of marriageable partners. The real puzzle, though, is that black men are also less likely to marry. And that's not only true for poor men or men who are incarcerated. It's also true for high-earning men. The marriage gap, the racial gap in marriage among men is actually wider at the top of the economic spectrum among men who earn $100,000 or more dollars a year, say, than it is among men who earn less.
Among Hispanics, Leora Lawton noted that they do tend to marry younger, but that's going up as they, particularly those who come from different countries, spend more time here.
Yeah, the earlier in your life that you arrive to the United States, the more likely you are to pick up on the norms and values of the U.S. And so if the person arrives from, say, Mexico or El Salvador at 7 and goes and finishes a high school degree, if not college, they're just going to behave like other Americans who were raised here. But those who arrive much more recently, who may not have a high school education, and indeed of the non-documented immigrants, about 80% don't have a high school education, they're going to marry younger. So, it very much has an impact on class.
And, Judith Stacey, let's talk about other countries compared to the United States. The decline is greater among the educated in European countries, Western European countries particularly.
Yeah, and Western and Northern, but there's a higher rate of cohabitation. So, in fact, you probably have fewer single people. And the whole debates here about family values and the concerns about whether children have the right composition in their family.
You remember Murphy Brown?
I wrote about Murphy Brown. So, to me, Murphy Brown was a kind of welfare queen in whiteface. It seemed to me at the time that was because Dan Quayle gave that speech for people in the audience old enough to remember that Dan Quayle was a vice presidential candidate.
Not only a candidate, he was vice president with George H.W.
Right.
Bush.
But I mean, right? at this moment, it was time, during the election, he gave that speech in South Central L.A. right after the riot. So, yeah. I think that the fact that there is less marriage in Scandinavia, for example, they're actually cohabiting couples are very likely to have children, and they're more likely to stay together through the life of the child than even married couples are in the United States.
Does cohabitation work there like it does here, where it's becoming more and more kind of a trial marriage or leading up to? It's not.
That's the difference. Yeah. That's why the rates are very, very different. So, in fact, there is greater stability even among unmarried couples in a lot of European countries than there is among married couples in the U.S.
There's also first of all, let me give out the phone number. I know there are many of you who would like to join this conversation, and this is an opportunity to do that. We welcome your phone calls. You can join us toll-free now, in fact. And one of the questions to ask is, what do you think is happening to this much venerated and beloved institution of marriage? Love and marriage goes together like a horse and carriage, all that. Personal stories, if you like, or narratives, keep them succinct if you can, or cogent. But also, do you think that this is a institution that's maybe on its way to some kind of obsolescence? Or what patterns do you see changing? Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786, and we welcome your phone calls and your involvement in the program. Again, toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also send an email to us, forum@kqed.org, or you can post a question or comment on our website if you'd like to join us that way by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. Rick Banks, less pressure to marry, too, though. That's part of the picture here. That is, it used to be, especially for young women, a lot of pressure, a lot of sense, especially if they were pregnant, to marry. But Hollywood has set a different pattern in many ways.
Different
cultural changes. Yeah.
That's exactly right. The culture has shifted in extraordinary fashion. We often forget that the pressure to marry was reflected in legal rules as well. As recently as 1960, say, marriage was the only setting in many states where one could, consistent with the law, have a sexual relationship. It was illegal to have sex outside of marriage, even if you were heterosexual, even if both parties were consenting. Marriage was the only setting in which one could legitimately raise children. Children who were born to unmarried parents faced a whole host of disabilities. The parents had few rights. If you wanted to live with a partner, to have sex with them, to start a family, you got married. And now that's been decoupled, of course, right? The relationship between a parent and a child depends virtually not at all on whether the parents are married. And the relationship between the adults can be as sexual as they want it to be. They can live together as long as they want, and they need not be married.
But there's more stability here with marriage than there is, again, say, in Northern and Western Europe, just to make that contrast again, isn't there?
Well, I think the real issue, sometimes we confuse the legal relationship of marriage with the relationship of the couple, right? And, you know, the real question is, are people forming intimate, enduring relationships? In many European countries, Sweden, France, for example, marriage rates are fairly low, but people do form intimate, enduring relationships, which goes to Judy's point, which is correct that unmarried couples maybe have longer lasting relationships in France, say, or in Sweden or some other Scandinavian countries than married couples do in the United States. So what's unique about the United States is that we accord marriage such extraordinary symbolic significance that we all sort of think that if we're going to have an enduring relationship, it'll be a marital one.
There was, as I said earlier, a poll that was done by Pew Research people in Time magazine and Leora Lawton. One of the things that stuck out in that poll to me was, or that analysis, was 2/3 of all divorces are initiated by women.
Yeah. You have to wonder what their husbands are doing to driving them crazy.
Rick makes through his hands up.
Right, right.
No, but seriously, again, part of the fact that women now can leave, they're able to do so because they are more able to support themselves. And again, there's less social cost and stigma of being divorced.
But back up for just a minute, because that idea of their being more able to support themselves. I remember, and I'm sure all of you remember, Leora Wiseman's
work, which was
a pioneer work about women being impoverished and indigent because of being single mothers.
Well,
and so.
Divorce is risky. I mean, and it is costly. And studies show that women and men also that have gotten divorced are in less healthy state, whether financially or emotionally or even physically. So it is a risky venture. I mean, certainly people have gotten divorced and been much better off for that. But it is, you know, statistically, it's a risky place to be. Why do women ask to get out of marriages? I think it's, you know, either you're going to offend some sex, some gender on some level, but either they've decided they don't have the ability or the skills to work with the man, or because the fact the man won't work with the wife. I mean, one way or the other.
And well, I think the important thing historically is that, you know, what Rick was saying earlier is that until women were completely in the workforce and then certain legal changes, which changed the rules of marriage and divorce too, women who wanted out of a marriage felt pretty stuck.
Yeah.
And now women, it's costly, it's challenging, it's not a pleasure. Very few people eagerly look forward to a divorce or want to do it, and they realize the risks. But it's possible, and people don't feel as trapped in marriages as they once did.
You were talking before, Judith Stacey, about Murphy Brown and all
right.
of that family value stuff that Dan Quayle brought up. I'm looking at the number here. 8 times the children out of wedlock now than there were in 1960.
That's right. Well, there are more white children born to unwed mothers now than there were to black women when Daniel Moynihan in the 1960s wrote his
infamous thing about the matriarchy
of the
black family.
Yeah, exactly. The tangle of pathology.
And again, so many cultural changes, Rick Banks. For example, brides' fathers are not necessarily paying for the weddings anymore.
That's right.
At least we hope not.
Well, I mean, there are more splits and divisions of those costs and so forth. I remember being at a wedding and the father stood up and said, this is a new chapter in their lives and this is chapter 11 for me. Let's bring our callers into this. Alex, let's start out with you. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I was just hello?
Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air. We can hear you fine.
I was just saying, I'm a young person. I'm 26 years old, and a lot of my peers have been living together, including myself earlier. That didn't work out, but that's an example of just sort of younger people living together. I heard a reference to trial marriages, and I think that's something like a lot of us feel like, I guess we're looking for that perfect situation and the perfect person, so we sort of try it out for a little while, and then see if it works or doesn't. Some of my friends have gotten married and some like myself haven't. So it seems like a newer sort of thing. And I just sort of mentioned briefly, I was wondering if you could sort of, if that's a pattern across the board, or is that, I'm college educated as are most of my friends, if that's more of a trend for my demographic or if that's more across the board.
Well, Alex, can I ask you a question? Are you, you think your generation, I don't know what we're talking about here, the Z generation?
I'm about 26. I don't know what we're called.
Yeah, I don't know either. That's why I'm groping here. But do you think that you're looking more for perfection in some ways? Okay. Go back to what we were talking about, Rick Banks, in terms of, again, cultural changes, because young people have a very different view of marriage, say in their 20s now, than even young people in their 30s.
Right. No, I think that's exactly right. And I think the caller actually puts his finger on what is a central change, which is that the way I think of it is that marriage has gone from being a necessity mm-hmm. to being a luxury. Mm-hmm. Right. It's something that people want, but it's you want it in part because it's a marker of status. It's a marker of achievement. It represents the sort of culmination or you're having arrived in some way. And the expectations are clearly higher. The expectations people bring to marriage for emotional compatibility, for personal satisfaction, for personal growth, fulfillment, they're much higher than they've been for prior generations.
Is there a kind of status in this, I'm wondering? If you're waiting longer mm-hmm. and saying, I'm not going to get married until it's right and economically mm-hmm. okay for me, then maybe you're saying, hey, I'm married now, I've arrived. I mean, this is a sign that not only maturity, but economic maturity. Yeah.
I think that's exactly right. And one of the markers of that is in the size of weddings. You mentioned earlier about how much weddings cost. And there's some evidence that weddings have become progressively more expensive over the last many
destination
decades.
Weddings
right.
Now, yeah.
They've become more expensive. So it used to be where a wedding was a small gathering of family and friends before the community. And, and they become more lavish over time, much more expensive over time, however you slice it. And one
I didn't want to tell you what my daughter has spent in the way of, because if you're asked to be a bridesmaid and go to a Caribbean destination wedding and
yep. And so one explanation of this is that this is, represents having made it. By the time you get married, you have made it. And conversely, when people don't get married, it's because they don't feel that they've made it. They don't have the house. They don't have the car. They're not set. They're not in their career. So they're not ready to have that celebration.
Is the push for same-sex marriage and how significant mm-hmm. the word marriage is, because it was the distinction in the struggle between same-sex marriage and civil unions or domestic partnerships when legally mm-hmm. within the state they were giving exactly the same mm-hmm. rights. But there's a dignity element and a status element that is deeply honored.
That's a great point. In California, same-sex unions confer almost exactly the same legal benefits
same
as marriage.
Thing in Vermont.
Tom, join us. Let's hear from you. Good morning.
Good morning. I got married about 10 years ago when I was 37, and I thought that was rather late in life. But I was speaking with my grandfather, who died about 10 years ago in his 90s, and I was very surprised to learn from him that he got married in his early 40s. And when I asked him why, he attributed that really to the economic times.
Right.
From when he was in his 20s and 30s, that, of course, being the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess sort of a comment, first off, is there is this sort of perception in our country that only now are people getting married later. But my question for your guest would be to the demographer is whether you have any sort of data on sort of those trends on marriage vis-a-vis economic times, and in particular during the Great Depression.
Yeah, let's hear Leora Lutton.
Yeah, so the U.S. actually has an interesting history of very early age at marriage compared to Europe, probably because we had land to move into in the 1800s. And then the age at marriage has fluctuated since then. It's gone up, it's gone down. It goes up when people can't afford it, and also so that during the Depression, there were marriages that were delayed, but also World War II and World War I delayed marriages. That was a real delay in terms of the spouses weren't there. And so you saw this bump in marriage and a decline in age at marriage after World War II as we entered into the baby boom eras. But that was really an aberration in many ways of American history. It could be that the later age of marriage is actually more normal for a more developed country.
Well, on the cover of Story Time magazine said marriage used to be like the draft, now it's like West Point.
Right, exactly.
There's a metaphor to grapple
That's
with.
Great.
In the meantime, we're coming up on a break. When we come back, we'll hear from more of you. Again, if you'd like to join us in this conversation, feel free. It's toll free, 866-733-6786. You can also send an email to us, forum@kqed.org, or post a question or comment on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. This is Forum. I'm Michael Craig. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and fewer adults are getting married in the United States than ever before. And for those who do get married, many are delaying that decision until they're older. As part of Forum's Our Changing Community series on the 2010 census, we're looking at who is saying I don't, to marriage, and why. And we're also finding out all kinds of demographic statistics, some of them quite fascinating. Three-quarters of the people who were asked say it's best to be married if you have kids. And in fact, just another thing to factor into this, more people are meeting in terms of sealing nuptials or getting married goes professionally than ever before. In other words, because of the changes in the workplace and women becoming more professionals, and we're talking about heterosexual marriages here as well as same-sex marriages. Mm-hmm. Doctors are marrying doctors, pilots are marrying pilots. That sort of thing is also increasing. Studio is Leora Lawton, who is a sociologist and demographer at UC Berkeley, executive director of the Berkeley Population Center, Rick Banks, professor of law at Stanford, and also author of Is Marriage for White People? How the African-American Marriage Decline Affects Everyone, and Judith Stacey, professor of sociology at New York University and author of Unhitched, Love, Marriage, and Family Values from West Hollywood to Western China. I'm sorry, Leora, are you going to say something?
I was going to say something, but it's all right. Go ahead.
Should we go ahead and take some more calls? Let's find out what people are thinking or what they're asking. Chris, you're on.
Hi, yes. I'm actually originally from the Midwest, and I had what was called in my mid-20s the trial starter marriage. Mm-hmm. I felt like there was some societal, you know, cultural things maybe from being in the Midwest that was really kind of pressuring me and feeling like I needed to do this to, you know, become an adult. Divorced less than 2 years later and been living in California now for 10 years, and I'm in a committed relationship, have a 7-month son, and absolutely no desire to get married again. Personally, it's because I make significantly more than my partner, but also, I mean, I feel like we have the best of everything right now, just cohabitating and raising our son together. I wonder if there, for the caller, for our panel, if there's a significant difference between areas or regions as to when people are getting married, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you. Well, here in San Francisco, they're getting married less among young adults than anywhere, Leora Lawton. I saw about the big cities. I saw that figure.
Yeah, the Bay Area doesn't get married as much, and we get married later. And a lot of it has to do with the demographic makeup of the population mm-hmm. here. We have, you know, nearly half of the people in the Bay Area have college degrees compared to, say, 30% in the rest of the country on average. And so the way we do marriage is very different. And also there is the gay population here as well. But I think even beyond that, we do marriage differently. But in other states in the country, say Oklahoma or Nebraska, they get married very young, but they also are much more likely to get divorced because getting married young is associated with much higher rates of divorce. So because they're not old enough, perhaps, or mature enough to pull it off, and they don't. And also because of the fact that they have more financial issues. When you marry young, you haven't likely finished college and gotten the better job. So yeah, and with those different, if everyone is getting married younger, then you have much more of a pressure, social pressure, to get married as well. Here in California, you have the latitude to do what you want to do. And if what you want to do isn't being permanently partnered at that point in time, then you don't do it.
But also, I wanted to comment on what you said about doctors marrying doctors, because I think that's one of the other ironic effects of the overemphasis on marriage and the fact that economics play into it so much. One of the paradoxical effects, I think, of the success of feminism in changing the notions of equality both in the workforce and marriage is that we led to greater economic inequality, because now it's two careers as opposed to one, where marriage used to be a kind of income sharing unit within a small base. Now we have a huge gap between both those who can marry and what they bring to the marriages. So we do, in fact, have two professional family marriages, and then we have people at the lower ends. And you get the other paradox of what a wonderful book calls red families, blue families, of that the states that are the most conservative actually have the most unstable marriages, the lower they marry earlier.
Seen those statistics, yeah.
Yeah.
Here are some comments from listeners. Here's a listener named Butler who says, marriage can't happen if people don't meet. As much as the mainstream media pretends that meeting people is an easy and frequent occurrence, in many areas this is a falsehood because A, people are working long hours, or B, people have been trained by the media to fear strangers. In recent years, there is much emphasis in movies and TV on meeting people in bars, but this is like going to a used car dealership hoping to find a reliable car. And another listener, Sarah from Dublin, writes, as a never married, child-free 42-year-old woman in the suburbs, I take some exception to the statement that there is less social stigma to being single than there used to be. Saying that it is more acceptable now is like saying people are no longer racist. While it may no longer be PC to treat single women as outcasts, believe me, the attitude is still considerably prevalent.
I mean, Rick should, yeah, I mean, I think she is onto something. So, you know, usually when we talk about marriage, we talk about the legal rights associated with marriage. And in fact, though, the legal rights associated with marriage, that whole bundle of legal benefits, that has all declined dramatically. Mm-hmm. There are fewer legal rights associated with marriage now than ever in our history. And that may seem odd, but that is the fact. And most of the legal entitlements that are associated with marriage are more likely to be drawbacks than benefits. A spouse, for example, may be liable for one spouse's medical expenses, right? And so,
or somebody may be worried about community property and what it means in terms
right,
of the
final. And that can be a benefit or a drawback. But so the listener, though, is correct that there is still a great symbolic importance attached to being married. It is still the case that people who are married are viewed differently than people who are not married. It is still the case that being married, again, is a marker of status, achievement, success. And so some people can be unmarried and be fine, but others feel a bit of a stigma.
No, I mean, I would say a double thing about that. The listener, she's absolutely correct that there's enormous stigma remains about singlehood versus couple. It's a very couple-oriented society, and marital status is at the top. But compared to the way it was when I was growing up, it certainly has declined. There's more possibility.
People who split up and they say suddenly their whole social life is gone. I mean, because it was built on marriages and couples, and suddenly they're single and they're seen differently and they feel they're interacting in a different way with the couples and can't really interact with them the way they did. You know, in fact, I've heard that statement from divorced people. Sure. The whole world is couples, or it seems to be. They are a lot.
There is a very strong effect of couples. And, and the caller's right. I didn't mean to make it sound like there's no stigma. There's still a lot of stigma, and you do hear lots of phrases about that.
Not as much. And you don't hear spinster anymore.
You don't hear the word spinster is pretty much gone at this stage. But it is a coupled world, and you do notice that when you're single socially, that the world does tend to revolve around families. Mm-hmm. For those who are choosing or not choosing to be not married at this point in time, whether it's by will or not, I would say invest in friendships because those friendships are extremely important. There are a lot of advantages to being married. There are advantages to being not married. But as you get older, when you start needing people around you, family has traditionally been the most reliable source, so you better have really strong friendships if you're going to...
Or strong other kinds of families, and that's the other thing.
Extended family.
Or
extended family or created structures, and there are people who do family in a whole host of other ways that we don't give enough social recognition and support to.
And we'll give our listeners more support here and bring them into the conversation. Ricardo joins us from Denver, Colorado. Welcome.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for the opportunity. Listen, here, I am a African American male. I'm 57 years old. I have two daughters, one 21 and in college, and one 18 and just about to start going to college. My comment, and I want to hear your all guys' opinion. I find in my circle of friends, the girls seem to be all headed to college and have some sort of plan. All the guys, all the young men seem to be less serious about or less sure about where they want to go. So I'm worried a little, slightly worried about where they're going to find husbands or because the guys in their age group don't seem to be behind them in terms of getting ready for life. You know what I mean? So could that be part of the reason that African American women have less opportunities? Is it that the boys? Because I don't really believe that our school system serves the boys as well as they serve as it serves the girls. So,
thanks for your question, Ricardo. I want to hear from Rick Banks on this.
Yeah, I think if you're concerned about the young women finding husbands, you should be more than a little worried, because in fact, among African Americans, we see in the most pronounced and exaggerated fashion that women are beginning to outperform men. Among African Americans, in particular, two women graduate college every year for every one black man. two women graduate college for every one black man every year. So if these women are – so these women face fairly dire prospects within the African-American community. And these are also changes that may be reflected among the broader population. It's true now that among women in general, or among people of all races, women outnumber men among college graduates. Mm-hmm. Women are also at parity in law school and medical school. And women are moving ahead at the precise time that advanced education is becoming more economically valuable.
You remember that old, I don't know, it was a canard, crazy statistic about women of a certain age being as likely to find a husband as, you know, a terrorist is to...
yeah, that turns out not to be
true. That's not
right. I mean, it was one of those popular culture things or urban myths that just boom.
It was a Valentine's Day story after some census data was released, but it was very misleading.
Right. One of the reasons that's troubling.
Leora can explain.
Let me just say briefly. One of the reasons that's troubling though is because it suggests that women who are unmarried are in some horrible predicament or situation, and that's not the case, right? It is possible for people to live without being married and have a perfectly fulfilling life. But it is also the case that most of us at some point decide that we want a partner. We decide that we want someone in our life with whom we have an intimate relationship to share the ups and downs. And given the changing economic positions of men and women, it's going to become much more difficult for people to strike that deal.
There's still a kind of programming. We keep coming back to culture because I know that's a lot of your work. I keep thinking about all the people who grew up with this notion, happily ever after.
Right.
I mean, and it still, I think, affects ongoing generations, even though it's been receding in probably its influence or its impact. Here's some listeners who write in. Michelle says, I'm 29, and I would argue that it's not only a matter of weddings being expensive or marriage being a sign of having made it. I think we recognize that marriages are difficult and a lot of work, and we want to make sure that we found someone that with whom we can do that hard work. We've seen the marriages of parents and friends fall apart, and rather than that making us have less respect for marriage, it leaves us awed and cautious. James writes, one of your speakers mentioned that women initiate two-thirds of divorces. Given that men are generally saddled with a much larger share of divorce payments, is it surprising that men are less interested in marriage? It seems the odds, if a divorce occurs, are stacked against men.
Well, we love that.
Yeah, big smile on Leora's face here.
It's not true.
It's
not true.
And it's also the case. We should know there is data, again, that women file the papers in about two out of every three divorces. But we should not so readily assume that means the woman is the one actually initiating the divorce who wants to be divorced. It might be that the woman is just the one who's going to go down and sign the papers and have them filed with the court. Right. And it could be that the husband wants to divorce every bit as much as she does.
And here's another listener who says, I think a lot of young people today grew up with broken homes and want to make sure that their marriages will stay together and are marrying later because of this. That kind of conforms to a lot of research by people like Judith Wallerstein and others.
That's research that has some problems.
Yeah, no, I know. But I said research like Judith Wallerstein's.
Yeah.
We don't want to get into that whole. But here's another listener who says, I'm a college-educated white professional in my mid-30s with a decent income, and my boyfriend and I have been together for 12 years, living together for 10 in the liberal enclave of the East Bay. We have no interest in getting married. My parents have been married for 40 years and can barely tolerate each other. My boyfriend's mother has been married and divorced 5 times, while his father has been in a relationship with a woman for 15 years and only recently married so they could share pension benefits.
Right.
Okay, let's go to more of your calls. Amy, join us. You're on the air, Amy.
Hi, I am a single mom, and my partner and I did not get married before we had our daughter, and that was largely because I had excellent credit and wanted to buy a house, and he did not. So that was one of the reasons we elected not to get married before we had our daughter, and as it turned out, it was a good move because I felt very overburdened with all of the work. I felt as if I had two children at home. But what has happened since we have split and he now has our daughter half the time is that now he has actually stepped up. And I have now, I wouldn't say that this is a preferable way to raise a child. It certainly is not. I would prefer to raise my child without having to fragment her world and go from one house to the other house. But I have to say that when I talk to my friends who are in quote-unquote intact households, they are envious of me that I have nights off. And granted, I'm doing a tremendous amount of working or packing the gym into those nights, and I end up having very extreme schedules. But I have found that almost to a, gosh, I can't even come up with a woman who hasn't said this, including, I'm about to break confidence, the woman who answered the phone when I called in on this program. sorry, but every single woman I talk with says, how is it that you have nights off? Because my husband doesn't get it. And these are women who have jobs also. These aren't necessarily just stay-at-home moms. I don't really know many stay-at-home moms now.
Well, I'm thinking about Arlie Hochschild's book, you know, The Second Shift. I mean, some of these women are doing jobs, and then they have all the domestic responsibilities, and it's much more weighty on them.
Well, there's that, too, and the other...
And a lot of the... And I'll have one more little comment on this, and then I'll take whatever off the air. But the other thing that a lot of dads aren't as attuned to are things like, you know, Neosporin on the cuts, or brushing the girl's hair, or just the little day-to-day things, or schlepping to swim lessons and stuff like that.
Amy, I have a cousin who claims, of course, this is just maybe anecdotal, but it certainly conforms to your assessment, that when there's a crisis, 9 times out of 10, it's the mother who is called. It doesn't matter what the nature of the crisis is, but you know, if it means coming to the rescue or whatever, and they're both working, it doesn't matter. The mother's called. Yeah. Judith, you want to say something?
I wanted to pick up on one of the things that Amy said about so-called intact families, and I really wanted to challenge the notion of children of divorce and tell Amy that her experience isn't so unusual, and is especially, there are many, many women who find that in a joint custody situation that the men are necessarily more active and more involved, and that sometimes it actually turns out to be good for their children. And I think that the concept of children of divorce is a really unfortunate one. We don't call children of death if they lose a parent.
And you don't hear broken home, though, as much as you used to.
Not as much, but you still do hear it. And
it was in one of these emails, yeah.
Yeah, and you certainly hear children of divorce. And we don't, and that implies that divorce is the overwhelmingly most significant thing in that child's life. And for some children, that may be true, but for a lot of children, that is not true.
Amy, I'm sorry,
there's a very easy way to combat that we discovered, and that is we don't call it mommy's house and daddy's house. She has two houses. We call the houses by their street names. Mm-hmm. So she never has to pick which one is her house, and she doesn't feel that she doesn't have a house. Mm. She has two. And we never say, did you do this over at daddy's house? It's, did you do this over at, and then the street name. Mm-hmm. The other thing I wanted to say, and then I will take the rest of the comments off the air, is in the notion of the broken home or the intact house, is that, well, people in my generation, I'm in my early 40s and younger, we don't necessarily say that. But our parents, or worse, the gossiping that goes along in our parents or our in-laws, you know, that age, they say it a lot, and it's felt. That judgment is definitely felt.
Well,
thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, and good luck to you, and enjoy your nights out. By all means, by the way, if you want more information on our Changing Communities series on the 2010 census, simply visit kqed.org/forum. I wanted to get at that in. And also the thought occurred to me that Garrison Keillor, I think just last weekend, was saying that men often need to get married. They need wives because they need adult supervision, which is one of funnier lines. Let me go to more of your calls. In the meantime, we'll go to San Ramon and welcome Kim. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hi there. I would like to know what the panel thinks about the possibility that women are not only more economically evolved, but also more sexually evolved, and perhaps want multiple partners, don't necessarily want husbands, don't necessarily want lifelong monogamy, and are taking the approach of why buy the cow if I can have the milk?
I may have to leave that one alone.
I think she's onto something.
I don't know if you saw the Dan Savage story.
I did.
I actually participated in that story and have written
in the New York Times. Yeah.
Yeah. I've written in Unhitched.
Explain a little bit what it's about.
Yeah. This is about Dan Savage, the syndicated sex columnist,
gay columnist,
but who writes about sexuality in general, and who there's a story about him and raising the question of whether so-called infidelity might be a way of keeping marriages together. And so it's a kind of a challenge to a certain monolithic idea of monogamy. And I've written in the book as well about redefining fidelity to mean integrity, and that one size does not fit all in sexuality any more than in family structure. And so that I think we are seeing some reaction to that. And I would rather see less hypocrisy, less Schwarzeneggers and John Edwards and the endless sex scandals in our political arena, and more acknowledgement that people have different needs and it's better to work out something that's agreeable to all the parties rather than pretend that everyone believes in one standard.
And let me thank Kim for bringing that to the table here. And I'm going to some more emails. Marcia writes, a number of thoughts. Growing up in the Midwest, one's getting married at an older age if one delays after 22 or 23 and have children right away. I married at 24 and have been married 14 years, have no children. We're both college grads, but didn't have our economic future secured when we were married. In fact, I've said numerous times, we'd be either penniless or fabulously wealthy. We are more financially secure now. I've often thought I might not be with my husband if we hadn't married. I've grown to be a much better communicator than when I first married. At times, marriage helped push me to do the uncomfortable and communicate better. I have friends who'd be apart now if not for being married. Marriage, though, pushed them through tough times to come out to better times. I think if one cohabitates to find the perfect person, it's less likely. A good relationship grows and develops, and commitment is integral to that happening. And on the web, Elizabeth says, there's such a dearth of ritual and rite of passage in our society. It seems like many people who do decide to get married are actually just after the experience of having a wedding, a ritual to satisfy that basic human impulse. This seems to be evidenced by the over-the-top extravaganzas that weddings have become, as well as the disposable nature the actual bond has taken on.
Beautifully said.
And Marion writes, I would like to respond to one of the speaker's comments. He said something along the lines of, when people get married, it generally means they have made it. I would argue that the notion of making it is an evolving idea, as young people are coming up with more inventive and world-conscious careers, and it's taking much longer to achieve their goals. I'm also wondering how higher education is factored in this equation. I'm currently a graduate student at University of Hawaii. Most of my friends are waiting to get married until they finish their PhDs or MA degrees. As higher degrees become more and more common, I wonder how this affects decisions and appropriate time and age to marry. Leora Lawton?
Oh, I was reflecting back on the made it comment, and where you know, is marriage part of the sign of making it as an adult? And it used to be it was marriage and a job and home ownership. And now I tend to think you could rephrase it as renting cars, taking taxis, and staying in hotels, being signs of being an adult. And I'm sort of focused on a totally different question, but the idea of having a good marriage and pulling it together and growing through it, I think, is something that is harder for Americans to do. With a much higher proportion of people divorced, they don't have whose parents are divorced, they don't see that stability as well and don't have that role model and to go after. And so the idea that sometimes marriages do take some year or two or three or five to work out some significant bumps is something that some people are less able to pull off anymore. But when they do pull it off, it's very beneficial. But at times they just have to leave. It's not going to happen.
Here's a listener who writes, I'm an African-American female attorney who married my African-American male attorney husband 5 days before my 40th birthday. I'm one of six kids and the fourth daughter. My mother drummed into my and my sister's heads that we needed to be educated so we could be independent and not depend on a man like she depended on our dad, her husband. Because I was financially independent, I could afford to be choosy and was. I can't tell you how many black men wanted to be my house husband and stay at home with the kids we didn't yet have while I worked. I'm glad I waited because I married my equal in every way imaginable. My sisters are single, educated, financially independent, all own their own homes, and they're not looking to get married, and I don't blame them. The choices for them are bleak. Another listener says, somewhere I heard a retort, don't call me miss. I haven't missed a thing. another caller out
that's
here.
That's a great one.
Elizabeth, let's have you join us. Good morning.
Hi. You know, I've listened to the conversation, and I guess I've had a very strong opinion about this for some time. I feel as though Betty Friedan gave us this fabulous blueprint or idea of what the evolved woman would be and what the evolved partner would be in a marriage, but someone forgot to raise the men to have similar expectations of their role. There was no, you know, here you're teaching young girls to be independent and get jobs, et cetera, and what they should get from their spouses. But I don't see this. I didn't see the same thing happening with young men until recently. Would I have ever thought about marrying someone who couldn't, you know, at least take care of themselves? There's there's this huge schism between, you know, being a partner, dating, or being a couple, and suddenly you're married and you're picking up socks and doing laundry and making meals and cleaning up. And you said, okay, wait a minute. What happened here? The expectations of marriage seem very different for this last two generations.
There's a big question underlying your comments, and maybe it's been hovering over this whole discussion. Do men get more out of marriage than women do? They certainly live longer as a result.
Well, the data show they do get more out of marriage than women do.
They get a lot more out of marriage. And I think non-married men are in a much more risky position than non-married women. But men who are married, I mean, just count the ways. They live longer. They live healthier. They make more money. They have better sex, more sex. They have, I mean, it's, they have more asset accumulation. They have more friends. That's a much, much better situation for
men. Why do I hear all these married men complaining about no sex?
Because I think their expectations of how much they want versus the expectations of how some their wives may want may be different. But
when I was studying gay men in L.A., a couple of them said if straight men knew how much more sex we have, more of them would be gay.
We should add to that. A number of the viewers or listeners' comments here have focused on this questions of roles and expectations, and the general theme, right, has been that women's roles have evolved, whereas men have remained stuck in the past. And I think that really misses a lot, right? Women's economic positions have changed, but it's interesting that the caller and the woman who emailed both talked about earning money to be independent. For men, the parallel would be to earn money to be able to take care of a family. So even as women's economic positions have changed, they still don't see themselves as the provider, the person who is responsible for the family. And on the other side, the most resistant gender role has been that the man is the provider. A few minutes ago, one of the callers talked about having the daughter with her partner, and they didn't get married. And now they're working things out, and that's great that they have a cooperative relationship. But her first point was that they didn't get married because she thought he would ruin her credit report. And that's another way of saying, you know, he wasn't an economically fit husband.
There are still those roles. And I've got a quick question for you, Leora Lutton, before we conclude here, because we got seconds left. We've been talking about trial marriages. A listener says, ask your guests about the act of trial marriages. Living together before you marry actually increase chances of a healthy long marriage? I'm skeptical. It just seems trendy to me.
In the U.S., living together is often seen as a trial. It's really become, for many people, like dating. There are some people for whom a consensual relationship is more like marriage.
That's going to end. Thank you, Leora Lawton. Thank you, Rick Banks. Thank you, Judith Stacy. And thank you, our listeners. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.